Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose, Rose Colombo, right here for you every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Yes, listen up, because there's so much going on around the world, so we do have to listen up, right? Instead of looking down at our phones all the time. Gotta listen up, see what's all going on all around us. Well, today, right here on Colombo Chronicles, we have something exciting going on. So you can just grab a cup of coffee, glass of juice, a shake, and just sit down and relax, because you do need to do that. Take some deep breaths. It's very healthy for you, you know, to breathe in deeply and release that carbon monoxide back into the universe, and keep those lungs and that immune system strong. And at least until you get through Colombo Chronicles today from 12 to 1 p.m. Just kidding. Today we have an exciting guest, a prominent guest, and his name is J.T. White. And he is the author of a book hot off the press, a new novel, his first novel. And the title is Riley and Ben, Life Offers Second Chances. Do you believe life offers second chances? Well, you're going to find out. J.T. White, or Tim, to those who know him, had a successful career as an Atlanta attorney before retiring and turning to creative writing. He completed his undergraduate creative writing program at Georgia State in 2009. J.T. White says, "I took up fiction writing at my daughter's urging. I suspect they feared I would have too much time on my hands once I curtailed my law practice and would become a nuisance to their mother." White's daughters are well known in the literary world, Lauren Miracle, spelled with a Y, M-Y-R-A-C-L-E, is a New York Times best-selling author of middle school and young adult fiction, as the Witty Years and the TTYL series, Atlantan series. Susan Rebecca White is the author of critically acclaimed adult fiction such as A Place at the Table and her newest, We Are All Good People Here. He says, "My daughters," White is talking now, "accurately predicted that creative writing would be a productive way to spend my retirement." White has been writing since high school. His father owned a small town newspaper and encouraged him to contribute articles. He also contributed to the student newspaper in college and in law school and wrote professional articles during his legal career. For the first 2 years after Georgia State, White wrote short stories. Then for 4 years, he worked on a novel. Unfortunately, that novel, according to his daughters, wasn't up to publication standards. So the last 6 years, he labored over Riley and Ben, a fictional story inspired by experiences in his life. He called the process cathartic and engrossing. White has been married to Ruth Campbell White, a portrait and still life artist for 47 years. That is wonderful. Congratulations to them. They have a blended family of 6 children, plus 2 King Charles Spaniels, Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn. After completing the pre-law curriculum at the University of Tennessee in Martin, magnum cum laude, in 1960, White obtained a JD degree from Vanderbilt, Law Review and Order of the Coif, in 1964, and an LLM from Emory in 1972. Uniform Commercial Code and Bankruptcy. He still does pro bono work primarily for the Eritrean community in Atlanta. So now you know about our author and his book, Riley and Ben, Life Offers Second Chances, will be discussed in just a moment right after this important break. So don't touch that dial. We will be right back when we enter into the world of authors and experts.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
That's right, everyone. Listen up because Columbo Chronicles is about to enter into the world of authors and experts. And today, as I stated earlier, our prominent guest today is J.T. White, and he is the author of Riley and Ben. Life offers second chances. Thank God for that. So let's welcome J.T. White, his friends call him Tim, to Columbo Chronicles Live. Hi, J.T. How are you today?
Hello. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you here in sunny California. How's the weather out there?
It's very nice. It's been pleasant, fortunately. We haven't had bad weather for a few weeks here in Atlanta, and we love it.
Well, that's great. Well, we're happy to have you today on Columbo Chronicles Live because we know that your book is hot off the press and a brand new novel, Riley and Ben. And everyone's interested in human interest stories. Life offers second chances. So let me ask you, what motivated you to write Riley and Ben?
Well, the book was actually written in two parts, and the second part deals with Ben and his pursuit of Katie, which was motivated by my own attempts to understand why my wife, Ruth, didn't marry me the first time around in 1964. And there were some unanswered questions there, and when I was pursuing them, I think I got the answers. At least I got satisfactory to me answers. And then I started examining my life with my stepmother, which actually was going on before Ruth and I met, and thought that I needed to try to get a better handle on what was going on between her and me. That got me into part one. And as I've told many people, writing the book was cathartic on both levels. Not only did it help me see my stepmother not as a cruel person, but as a frightened, insecure woman who was threatened by the existence of me, that is her husband's child, by his first wife. And it also helped me to understand why Katie, that is Ruth, felt morally obligated to keep Clark, that is her first husband, out of Vietnam, and in her mind, doing that required her to marry him and not me. So that's
how
that started.
That's really amazing. So Riley had some difficult choices, though, so in your book, and such as initially deciding who should raise Ben after the accident, and you want to mention that, and his mother-in-law, his sister Nora, or even Riley himself looking back. Do you think that Riley made the right decisions?
Well, from today's point of view, yes. The answer might have been different in 1947, 1948, but after all, Riley had told his sister Nora that if she would keep Ben, Ben would be her boy and she would raise him as his own. And then when Riley, because he didn't think he was going to come back from the war, and then when he did come back from the war, he wanted his son back, and that's caused a real problem between him and his sister and caused him to go back on his commitment to her. And it actually caused a bigger problem between him and his new wife, because Eileen wasn't interested in raising another kid's child.
Well, yeah, I can understand that. So do you think that Riley should have been should have taken Ben from Nora and Frank in order to be a real dad, or just let him stay in Biloxi in what was a stable, loving home? What was your thoughts when you were writing this book about that?
I didn't think seriously about that question really until I was an adult, because I just never occurred to me. I didn't know all the facts about what had gone on back then. But as I thought back over it, I did have a happy time, a happy childhood, and it was actually Gulfport, not Biloxi, but I changed the locations for the benefit of the book. But I'm glad that my dad took me, and I'm glad I grew up with him and with my family. I had a wonderful brother and sister that I had a great relationship with, and as I may not have mentioned, but my relationship with my stepmother's mother, who was my grandmother, Margie, was absolutely wonderful. So I met some great people, and I think I had a good life. And actually, the problems dealing with Eileen that Ben had were probably they weren't every day. It wasn't like it was a torturous situation. It was a problem situation from time to time. But I think actually it helped Ben develop. So I think that getting back to the difference between Ben and me, that my father did the right thing by taking me back when he survived the war.
And so Riley served in World War II, and the Vietnam War was a major issue for Ben's generation. So how did the wars affect your character's decisions and your storyline?
Well, remember, World War II and Vietnam were only, 30 years apart. Well, actually more like 20 years apart from the beginning. And that's just a generation. So if I had not had my deferment based upon the injury I got in the accident, I'm sure I would have had been drafted. But if I had drafted, I would have been a JAG officer, and I wouldn't have been on the front line. So I wasn't in any kind of danger. And personally, I was against the war at that time. But it was affecting people's lives. People were making, I'm talking about the Vietnamese War, people were making decisions about trying to get deferments, about whether to go in, which branch of the military to go in, how to stay out. I mean, all sorts of things were going on. People were getting married, and not just Katie and Clark, but it happened time and time again. And people were making decisions based upon the war and the fact that they had to serve. So, yes, it was a major issue for the generation, and it affected the storyline tremendously. I mean, it's just I'm talking about the Vietnam War. It wouldn't have happened the way it happened had it not been for Vietnam.
So in your story, Ben was consistently a good student. So with his rocky childhood and with his stepmother, that's quite an achievement. So what motivated him to study so hard and do well in school, plus go on to law school, because that doesn't happen all the time when there's a problem at home with the step-parent?
Well, as I said earlier, it wasn't like an everyday. It wasn't a daily beating or a feeding me gruel and porridge. I had a good life, and I enjoyed school. I enjoyed my friends. I did well, and because I did well, I was encouraged to keep going, and that just it's sort of like success builds on its success on itself. And when Ben did well in high school, he went to college, did well in college, and went to law school. So all of that, it wasn't like an escape. It certainly was an escape in the sense that Ben was happier in school than he was at home with Eileen, that's for sure. But it just built on itself. I think that's the best answer to it. It was a natural progression because things went well when he was in school. He liked it, and he kept going.
And so your stepmother in the book, the stepmother in the book, Eileen, she was somewhat controlling and cruel to Ben. So was Ben aware of the abuse, or did he downplay it as he got older? And did the dad try to be a peacemaker and protect Ben from any abuses that he noted in the marriage?
Well, Rose, that's a good question, and I've thought about that a lot, too. And certainly in the beginning, Riley was a go-between Ben and Eileen, and he tried to keep the relationship on an even keel. I think, though, as time went on, Riley pretty much let Ben handle the thing by himself, because Ben seemed to be able to, he wasn't devastated by it, and so it wasn't a matter of Riley having to jump in all the time. But, and also remember, Eileen was Riley's wife, and Riley at this time had other children, so it couldn't be a war between Ben and Eileen. There had to be a peaceful coexistence, and I think that peaceful coexistence actually developed as time went on. It seemed like, as I said, the farther along it went, the easier it became for Ben to deal with it. So don't think of it as hell on earth or constant berating. It was just the situations that happened that demonstrated that Eileen was not interested in Ben. She never related to Ben. She never accepted Ben as her son, and that caused problems for Riley. But again, he had made a choice to stay with this relationship, and I think from Ben's perspective, he wasn't trying to get out of it. And from Riley's perspective, I think Riley had a good life, and he prospered too. So I can't say that it was a constant battle, because it wasn't. But there were times when Riley had to sort of put his finger on the scale, or what do they say, his thumb on the scale, in order to try to balance things out for Ben.
So was the stepmom in the book, Eileen, did she ever use physical abuse against Ben?
Well, other than the slapping, that was the big thing. And that was just, I figured in the end, there are several instances of that happening for sometimes just out of the blue. I'm sure there was something that motivated her at the time, but when it happened, it was a shock. So that's as close as you could get to physical abuse. And I've always felt like slapping is more loss of control. It's not a good way to discipline a child anyway. So that was as bad as it got.
Well, the reason I was asking that is because this is of human interest, and it goes on around the world, not just in America. And I think that, you know, with the issues being brought about child abuse today, I think this book is very timely in that aspect because, you know, if you slap a child today in public, you probably get arrested. So,
well, that's true.
But that wasn't
true in 1946.
Yeah, so the timing is important.
The timing is different.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but it's still, you know, it still happens in different degrees in different homes with step-parents and children, and it's very confusing for children. So I'm glad you wrote this book. So at least 75% embellished and edited, but nothing happened in real life exactly the way the story is told. Is that correct to say?
Well, let me clarify that, Rose. Let me clarify that. The incidents are there. They happened. They just didn't happen exactly the way they're written. Primarily because, as my professors at Creative Writing School at Georgia State said, a story has to be interesting. You're not writing a journal just to relate the facts. You're trying to make it interesting to the reader. So if it's a story is worth telling, it's better embellished. And if you want to make it have a flow and an arc, you've got to do some editing on it. So you can't just say, on day one, I got slapped, and on day 10, I left home. There's got to be some background in all that. So yes, the incidents are 75% correct. I mean, the incidents that are related are most of the book, but they're not exactly as they're related. Is that clear? Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. I mean, of course, you know, you have to embellish some things to keep the interest of the reader and keep the pages turning. And but I think all fiction is based on some truth, no matter what. You know, where else would we get the story, right?
Oh, I agree
right?
with that. But I have two daughters who are authors, and I can spot the incidents in their books where I know that's real life. So, yes, you're right. It's all based on – and you're supposed to write about what you know. I mean, I'm not
exactly.
I wouldn't get anywhere if I were trying to write about oceanography or the Himalayan mountains. I'm writing about something that I know a little bit about.
Exactly, and it comes out in the book. And so do you think that what happened to Ben in the story, the little boy, what happened to your fictional character, Ben, as he grew up, helped him to avoid the same mistakes that he experienced with his stepmother, and or did it just remain in his mind forever? Mm-hmm. And how did the character deal with that when he grew up?
Well, Rose, I don't think about this every day, but believe me, it has been an influence in my life. And I know when Ruth and I married, I had three children and she had two. And I was determined that I was going to learn from my stepmother what not to do. And also remember, and the book goes into detail, I had Eileen's mother was a saint, and she taught me how parents should deal with their children. And my father was pretty busy. I mean, you know, like fathers in that day and time weren't nearly as involved in the upbringing of their other kids as they are now. At least in the area of the country where I grew up, that was the case. So mothers carry the primary responsibility, and I'm so glad to say that in my situation, I had a stepmother who was an absolute saint. She taught me how to treat a child, and I remembered it. And I know when Ruth and I got married, we thought, okay, we're going to blend this family together, and there are not going to be any steps involved, and that's the way it's worked out.
I think that's so important, especially to the children, you know, to know that they're all accepted as equally and equally loved, to bring security into the family or into the home. And it's a win-win for everybody in that situation. But a lot of times people end up repeating what they were.
That's true.
You know, in that generational environment. So it's good to know that in your book that the opposite happened and it turned out for the best. So and you learn from the experience. And so did your stepmother ever make peace with you?
Well, as the French say, I would call it more a detente. She never came to accept me. But I did, in fact, promise my dad before he died that I would help mother after his death. And she needed, she just needed some things done. She needed some help. She needed some advice. And I also had my brother and sister to think about. So mother called on me to help her really up until her dying day. And she lived to, I think, 93. She had an old, and actually went through, had two more husbands. So she had a long married career. So I don't want to say made peace, but we certainly we came to an understanding where she relied on me. And even though I got little digs from her about the fact that I got divorced, which she was violently against, and the fact that I had I had to watch out for my children more than my stepchildren, which I vigorously disagreed with, those things kept going. But it wasn't, believe me, it was more like little digs and not everyday problems. And I'm not trying to downplay the hurt that I got from time when I would get those little digs, but I could live with them.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I think that a lot of children who have digs, maybe they're not slapped, maybe they're not hit, but words can hurt more than somebody slapping you. You can forget about a slap, the pain of words, you know, stays with your character, apparently, you know, until he passes away. And even though you accept it, the character accepts it and forgives the person, which is a good thing to do, and is kind to them, in your character does that in your book, I think that the words are something that stays embedded in your computer brain. Sometimes they pop up. And so
you're exactly right, and they can hurt a long time later. And you couldn't have said it better.
Thank you. And so I know this is your hot off the press novel of human interest and a book that everyone can relate to, because everyone today just about has a step parent, whether it's a mom or a dad, and you know, nothing's perfect. So I think a lot of young people and adults can relate to this book. So do you think that you'll ever write another book or do any other type of creating writing in the future?
Well, several people have asked me that question, and really I've covered the two subjects that were the most important to me, and we've not talked as much about the last half, which was the pursuit of Katie, as we did in the first half. But
do you mind telling our audience how you actually, met up with Katie again, or
we grew up in the same town. Our parents knew each other. We went to the same high school, the same elementary school, the same college, the same church. The only difference is we were 4 years apart. And so when Katie was interested in me, or in Ben, when he was a senior and she was a freshman in high school, he didn't give her the time of day. But, there are a lot of duckling to swan stories, and this was indeed one. And when Ben rediscovered Katie midway through law school, and she had just graduated from high school, she had blossomed, and she was a gorgeous woman. And he knew how smart she was because he'd been in school together with her earlier years. So it was almost the shoe was on the other foot. She had had a crush on him 4 years ago, and at that time he was smitten by her. But unfortunately, in his absence, she had gotten involved with another guy. And that other guy and she stayed together, really, from the time she started to college until she graduated and they got married. And again, she married him because he was subject to the draft. He had actually flunked out of school, been expelled from school for a year because of his grades, and she was afraid he was going to go. And then when he got back in, fortunately, marrying him gave him a deferment. So that put the kibosh on Ben's plans with Katie. He thought all along he and Katie were going to get together. I mean, not every minute of the day, but every episodically he thought that the tide was turning his way, and then it would go the other way, and he'd get slapped down again. So it kept persistence to stay there, and finally, in the end, and I don't want to give away too much of the book because that's part of the story, they got together, and I have to say they lived happily ever after. Now, please don't write that down because nobody lived happily ever after, but it was just a wonderful relationship.
That's fantastic. And so what is eritrines? Is that how it's pronounced, eritrines? Can you tell us about that?
Well, Eritrea is a little tiny community in Africa. It used to be a part of Ethiopia, but it's now there together. And there's a fairly large Eritrean community in Atlanta. And I had I actually met a few of them when I was practicing law, and it was just pure luck. I got to represent them and help them out, and then they kept coming to me for more than legal advice, and the relationship kept going. I'm not talking about the whole community. I'm just talking about the people that I dealt with, all of whom were extremely family-oriented, extremely reliable, extremely industrious, and I never had a problem with them. I helped them out. And when I retired, I continued to help them on a gratis basis, just to try to, everybody needs some help from time to time. And believe me, lawyers in Atlanta, I'm sure in LA, it's true too. The average guy has a hard time even thinking about hiring a lawyer. So for me to give these folks a little help along the way without too much demand on my time. It's been a satisfying situation for me, so I've continued it.
That's fantastic. And one other question I have for you is, what is your favorite book when you were a child?
Well, don't laugh, but it was the Grimm's Fairy Tales. And, you know, there were some awful stories. Although if you read those as an adult, you think, how could a child read these things? But they were fascinating to me as a child, absolutely fascinating. And I remember reading them over and over again, you know, I went through a science fiction phase also, and I went through, I never went through a romance phase, but as a child, It was the Grimm's Brothers Fairy Tales, and I recommend them to every child.
Well, I think that's a great recommendation, and I recommend that everyone get your book, Riley and Ben, Life Offers Second Chances. And now is your time to shine, J.T. White. And
well, thank you.
And you can tell our audience, any message you like, and you can tell them if you have any contacts on the internet and how to get your book, of course.
Well, the book is in hardback. If you buy it in hardback, you'll have to get it from Acapella Books in Atlanta because they're the only source for it in hardback. And that is at orders@acapellabooks.com. If you want it in softback or Kindle form, you can get it through Amazon, and everybody knows how to deal with Amazon. And I understand that it's probably only my friends and relatives that are interested in the hardback because the paperback is a little bit cheaper and also easier to carry around. But it is out in hardback, paperback, and e-book form, and it's been an exciting journey for me. I'm so glad. The publication date was I was in heaven the day the book came out, and I hope it sells. If it doesn't, I still love writing it. I'm so glad it's done. I doubt there's another book in me, but I'm delighted to have done this. Appreciate the opportunity to tell your audience on your program what that's meant to me, and I appreciate the consideration you've shown me and asking, I think, some very, very cogent questions about the book. So thank you.
Well, thank you, and keep up the good work. If you write another book, let us know. We'll be happy to promote your next book. And because, you know, retirement isn't about retiring. It's about doing what you love, right?
That is exactly right. And also, I think I told you I have two daughters who are authors, and they have been extremely important to me, too. So everybody in our family needs to be doing something. Again, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you, J.T. White. And you have a great day and a blessed life. And hopefully we'll talk to you again in the future.
Right.
God bless.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Very good. Bye-bye.
Bye. And J.T. White has left the building. And you can find his book, Riley and Ben, R-I-L-E-Y and Ben, B-E-N, Riley and Ben at Amazon.com. And you can get the soft copy and the ebook, and hopefully you'll check it out and purchase it, because, you know, it's always so exciting to read a warm story that has some truth in it and also a good happy ending, and, you know, and brings family back together. Because I think, you know, today it's so important that we really think about, you know, our families and how important it is, because the family unit is the foundation of a civilized nation. And so we want to, you know, even though we have all these outside forces trying to break up families, and I don't think they're going to be able to succeed at that, because in the end, what do we have? We have family. And we have memories, and we have great books. So everyone should, even if it's not for publication, write some stories about your life, what is of interest in your life that you would like to leave behind for your children and grandchildren. And, I mean, my kids always ask me to do that, and my grandkids, because I tell them stories of when I was growing up and when I was a teenager and all the different things that happened, and they find it so either funny or interesting, and you got to write that down. So do it, you know, just do it, because, you know, you're only here for a short time, but everybody's important, and everybody has a story, everybody has a book. And so, you know, don't think you have to retire. Think of it as a time that you can share your stories. And I hope you'll get Riley and Ben, Life Offers Second Chances, Amazon.com. And on that note, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back and find out what's happening around the world. So don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Yes, listen up, because we're going to enter into the world of politics and what's going on. Well, one of the things that's of interest is, do you have a dog? Well, guess what? The Purdue Vaccination Studies and Autoantibodies reports on their research on dogs and what they came up with. And it says that a team at Purdue University of Veterinary Medicine conducted several studies to determine if vaccines can cause changes in the immune system of dogs that might lead to life-threatening immune-mediated diseases. They obviously conducted this research because of concern already existed with the current COVID vaccines. It was sponsored by the Haywood Foundation, which itself was looking for evidence that such changes in the human immune system might also be vaccine-induced, if it found the evidence. And so, isn't that interesting? And they used dogs to find the evidence. But, of course, at the end it says that they're going to do more research. But they did find the evidence. And so you can find that at dogsnaturallymagazine.com. Very interesting. And then we have spreading false vax information might cost you your medical license. Well, what is false and what is true? I think that, you know, America is a nation of opinions and debates and arguments, peaceful arguments, and facts and people's truths, and, you know, and we should be able to expand our minds. And the only way we can expand our minds is by freedom of speech, listening to other people. We don't know everything ourselves, but many people can do research, and they do a lot of research of various doctors around the world, or scientists, or professors, and so forth, and learn a lot from these people. Not that you may not agree with every one of them, or your research comes with different conclusions. But the bottom line is freedom of speech is everything, or else we're silenced. And that's what communists do. Communism silences not only your facts, your truths, your opinions, your arguments for or against, but it also silences your thoughts. In China, they actually have the thought police. And if they accuse you of thinking of something that is in opposition to their government, you can be arrested. In China, they have the Merit app. So it's like a credit card app where they give you points and they grade you from Wall Street, the bankers. And so in China, they use this Merit app and a cashless society where you have to have an iPhone and a computer, because without that, you may not be able to buy or sell. You may not be able to travel unless you have a good rating. You may not be able to buy a home. You may not be able to shop. You may not be able to buy food. This is all based on merit. So the government is in total control of every human being. That may seem crazy to you, but that's because you haven't done your research on what communism does to individual people and to their citizens as a whole. Spread of communism is very serious. And when our government takes the Constitution and puts its big boot on our Constitution or rips it up and says it's meaningless, we have a problem, because they swore to uphold, protect, defend, preserve the United States Constitution that establishes the rule of law. They are the supreme laws of the land. They are not to be violated. And it's so important to preserve for life, freedom, liberty, rights, sovereignty, God, Bible, Christians, Jews, Catholics, and the right to life, the right to thought, free choice, free will, choose, the right to privacy, the right to be an individual and to control your own body and your own mind. We are at a crossroads of becoming slaves of the government. Constitution of the United States prohibits. It prohibits the government from using people as slaves, as property, as chattel, and to control the bodies and the minds of individual Americans, with the goal of doing the same around the world. Because we are a republic that operates by the rule of law, but everyone today is feeling the big foot. And that big foot may end up on your front porch, knocking on your door, trespassing on your private property as they ignore the Constitution of the United States and rule by executive order with mandates. That is not America. Because when you rule from the executive office with mandates, then you are violating your sworn oath. You are destroying the three branches of government, because it is the legislative branch that makes laws that must be in accordance with the United States Constitution and the will of the majority of Americans, and in the best interest of the majority of Americans. And it must provide the safety and welfare for the American people, for, by, and with the American people. And it's important to remember that the Constitution must include laws that are in accordance with the will of the majority of Americans, so that they are not imposing their will upon the American people. Mandates do that. Where in the United States Constitution does it say the executive office is to ignore constitutional law and rule by mandates, which is what communist nations do? You have no choice in a mandate. That is an America. That is an American. And no one's questioning this. And it began with Obama and Biden in 2009, when Obama said that the Constitution was meaningless and Congress was meaningless, and that he would run the nation by executive order, and he did. And all three branches of government, no one opposed it. They went along with it, and they allowed him to mandate what we can and cannot do, such as he mandated that we must buy a consumer product called Obamacare, or ACA, the Affordable Care Act, which wasn't affordable at all, and that we must sign up by a certain date, and we must pay up with our own earnings after taxes to buy this consumer product with no choice, no free will, or else be punished. And the Supreme Court approved it. And the Congress didn't write it. They didn't read it. And yet they approved it. 2,700 pages of mandates, laws, regulations, fines, taxes, punishments for the American people, while they exempted themselves from signing up, paying up, or from being punished, fined, or taxed. And they exempted the unions, such as Sue. They exempted themselves and the federal justices and judges. And they exempted their wealthy donors and bundlers, such as Gates, who only pays $9 in taxes. And they provided a taxpayer mandate for Americans to pay for their Cadillac health care insurance. And they exempted Muslims and they exempted illegals. So it was only for the hardworking taxpayer Americans, natural-born Americans, and legal, loyal, patriotic, naturalized Americans. And inside of Obamacare, which in my opinion, it appears to me that Bill Gates may have compiled Obamacare's 2,700 pages at Microsoft, because Nancy Pelosi stood on stage on camera and said that taxpayer-funded abortions was not included in Obamacare. Bill Gates' dad was a director of Planned Parenthood. Bill Gates and Melinda Gates have 100% donated and supported Planned Parenthood, and still do to this day. So their whole family has done this for years. And inserted into Obamacare, mandated worldwide, mandated taxpayer-funded abortions, requiring Americans, American workers, to pick up the tab to kill babies legally, according to SCOTUS, around the world, using America's taxpayer money for financial incentive to encourage leaders in third world countries to implement Planned Parenthood and abortions in their country, which is a depopulation program. Now, if we were to depopulate every nation's babies around the world, there would be no more Africans. There would be no more Indians in India. There would be no more Chinese in China. There would be no more Japanese in Japan. There would be no more Italians in Italy. There would be no more Irish in Ireland. And most of all, there will be no more Americans in America, because we have depopulated over 70 million future natural-born Americans who are needed to preserve the United States of America now and in the future. And those babies are not with us today to protect, preserve, defend, and uphold the Constitution of the United States and this great country that is now meaningless. And we are being overthrown by third world countries sending their illegal, their foreigners, and their gang members and their cartel members and their jihadists and their terrorists and the felons into America, and the traffickers, leaving the American people at risk, especially during a so-called pandemic and after locking down Americans and losing thousands of businesses and millions of jobs. So I just wanted you to think about that, because not only in Obamacare is mandated taxpayer-funded abortions worldwide requiring Americans to pick up the tab, but worldwide mandated taxpayer-funded vaccines requiring Americans to pick up the tab. And not only that, but euthanasia, early end-of-life counseling for Americans as well. For the very sick, for the veterans, for the elderly, they've even implied that possibly for children who have autism and those who are mentally and physically challenged. Where are we going with these mandates? that were never read and never studied, never reviewed by the United States Congress, which is gross negligence on their part. They admit they never read them, and yet they rubber stamped them approved. How is it in America that 2,700 pages of unread mandates and laws and punishments and fines and taxes and regulations can be legal, lawful, constitutional, and not null and void in the United States of America? When they are, that those 2,700 pages are filled with depopulation programs of the United States American citizens. So it's really not about health care, it's about death care and requiring Americans to pick up the tab for worldwide vaccines and worldwide abortions of innocent babies. And on that note, this is the Rose, wishing you a blessed day. I hope to talk to you again on next Wednesday when we'll have another prominent guest. And again, go out and get the book, Riley and Ben, Life Offers Second Chances. And guess what? You have a second chance today. You have a second chance to call your representatives. You have a second chance to write them, email them, contact them. You have a second chance to recall them. Get out there and start filing petitions. You have a second chance to recall those who are not upholding their sworn oath and are in violation of their sworn oath, which is a crime, and they need to be removed from office. And thank those who do uphold, preserve, defend, and protect the Constitution and the sovereignty and God and the American people, the military and law enforcement and first responders, and who do defend the police. They need to hear from you too. So God bless you. God bless America. And this is the Rose signing off on Colombo Chronicles Live.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.